on that, and I have a pretty long article, 6 pages. But my hope is that by reading this, at least for me and maybe some others, we'll be able to more relish and get a stronger feeling for Iskcon society, knowing how hard Srila Prabhupada worked and the sacrifices he made to bring us all here together. Also, today marks the day when Vishwarup Prabhu took sannyas, that's the older brother of Lord Chaitanya. So it's the same day, and some of our acharyas explained that in 1510, it's about the same day that Lord Chaitanya also took sannyas. It's explained like that in some places, according to their astrological calculations. And Lord Chaitanya did this in pursuit of his brother. So, anyway, I would like to read this here. It's a little long, so please bear. Acceptance of Sannyas by Srila Prabhupada, 1945. One night, Abhay had an unusual dream. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appeared before him, beckoning. He was asking Abhay to leave home and take sannyas. Abhay awoke in an intensely emotional state. How horrible, he thought. He knew it was not an ordinary dream, yet the request seemed so difficult and unlikely. Take sannyas? At least, it was not something he could do immediately. Now he had to improve the business, and with the profits he would print books. He went on with his duties, but remained shaken by the dream. In 1948, Abhay closed his Lucknow factory. He had fallen behind in employees' salaries, and since 1946, he had been paying past rent in installments. But when sales dropped, continuing the factory became impossible. He lost everything. Srila Prabhupada, I started a big factory in Lucknow. Those were golden days. My business flourished like anything. Everything in the chemical business knew. But then, gradually, everything dwindled. With the help of some acquaintances in Allahabad, he opened a small factory there, in the same city where his Prayag pharmacy had failed 15 years before. He moved to Allahabad with his son Vrindavan and continued manufacturing medicines. While the rest of the family remained at Banerjee Lane, Calcutta, Abhay continued his traveling. But now he was often away for months at a time. And then he had the dream a second time. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared before him. Again he was beckoning, indicating that Abhay should take sannyas. And again Abhay had to put the dream aside. He was a householder with many responsibilities. To take sannyas would mean to give up everything. He had to earn money. He now had 5 children. Why is Guru Maharaj asking me to take sannyas? He thought. It is not possible now. The Allahabad business was unsuccessful. At present, the condition of our business is not good, he wrote his servant Gauranga, who had asked to rejoin him. When the condition gets better, and if you are free at that time, I will call for you. He worked honestly, but results were meager. As with everything else, Abhay saw his present circumstances through the eyes of scripture, and he could not help but think of the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation, when I feel especially merciful towards someone, this is Krishna saying, I gradually take away all his material possessions. His friends and relatives then reject this poverty-stricken and most wretched fellow. He had heard Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati quote this verse, and now he thought of it often. He took it that his present circumstances were controlled by Lord Sri Krishna, who was forcing him into a helpless position, freeing him for preaching Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, somehow or other, my intention for preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu increased, and the other side decreased. It was not disinclined, but Krishna forced me. You must give it up. The history is known. How it is decreased, decreased, decreased. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti had also prayed, my dear Lord Krishna, Your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Srila Prabhupada. So in 1950, I retired, practically. Not retired, but a little in touch with business, whatever is going on. Then almost it became nil. Whatever was there, all right, you do whatever you like. One night a boy had a striking dream, the same dream he had had several times before during his days as a householder. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared just as a boy had known him, the tall, scholarly sannyasi, coming directly from the spiritual world, from Krishna's personal entourage. He called to a boy and indicated that he should follow. Repeatedly he called and motioned. He was asking Abai to take sannyas. Come, he urged, become a sannyasi. Abai awoke in a state of wonder. He thought of this instruction as another feature of the original instruction Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had given him at their first meeting in Calcutta. The same instruction that his spiritual master had later solidified in a letter. Become an English preacher and spread Krishna consciousness throughout the Western world. Sannyas was for that end, otherwise why would his spiritual master have asked him to accept it? Abai reasoned that his spiritual master was saying, now take sannyas and you will actually be able to accomplish this mission. Formally, the time was not right. Abai deliberated cautiously. By accepting sannyas, a Vaishnava dedicates his body, mind, and words totally to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, renouncing all other engagements. He was doing that already. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had offered sannyas to his leading disciples so that they could continue his mission. They hadn't done it. Preaching in the West had proved perilous, even for the Gaudiya Math most recognized sannyasis. How could he, a mere householder, presume he could succeed where the others had failed? He was hesitant. The helpless, incapable feeling he had expressed in his Viraha Ashtaka was there. But now his spiritual master was beckoning him. Over all other considerations, even over natural humility. Now, although he was elderly and alone, the desire to preach, just as his spiritual master had preached, remained within him. A fierce, though sometimes quietly expressed, determination. The Vedic standard and the example set by the previous acharyas was that if one wanted to lead a preaching movement, sannyas was required. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had taken sannyas to facilitate his missionary work. Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas to further his Sankirtan movement. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when his young students had been disrespectful towards him, treating him as an ordinary man, he had taken sannyas. Because a sannyasi is automatically respected, Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas was a calculated tactic. As soon as he began traveling throughout India as a sannyasi, he immediately attracted thousands of followers to the Sankirtan movement. Knowing that many cheaters would accept the saffron dress and abuse the respect given to sannyasis, Lord Chaitanya had advised against accepting sannyas in the age of Kali Yuga. He knew that cheaters in the guise of sadhus would act immorally, accumulate funds on their own for their own sense gratification, and make many followers simply to enhance their own prestige. Posing as swamis, they would cheat the public. Because the people in Kali Yuga are unable to follow the rules and regulations of sannyas, Lord Chaitanya had recommended that they simply chant Hare Krishna. However, if a person could actually follow the rules, and especially if he had to spread the Sankirtan movement, sannyas was necessary. A boy first had to approach one of his godbrothers for permission. He decided, because of course at that time Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj had left the planet, so he approached his godbrother. He decided to turn to Bhakti Vilas Tirtha Maharaj, the leader of the Chaitanya Math in Calcutta. So at that time, after the demise of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, the Gaudiya Math split in two. One was called the Gaudiya Math, the other one was called the Chaitanya Math. So Abhay still thought of the Chaitanya Math as the headquarters of his spiritual master's mission. During the heated legal disputes, the Chaitanya Math had been the most prized acquisition, and since 1948, it had been under the legal ownership of Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj. Now, although each sannyas had his own place or places, the Chaitanya Math and Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj legally represented the Gaudiya Math entity. Abhay felt that if he were to take sannyas and go preach in America, he should give the Chaitanya Math the first opportunity to support the work. In April 1959, Abhay wrote to Tirtha Maharaj inquiring about sannyas as well as about the Chaitanya Math's printing some of his manuscripts. And since no one was going abroad, he volunteered to do so on behalf of the Chaitanya Math. Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj replied that Abhay should first join the Chaitanya Math. He mentioned a strife that still lingered. Those who are against Chaitanya Math, they are motivated by their individual ambitions. Anyone who was against the Chaitanya Math, he said, was acting illogically and against the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So according to Tirtha Maharaj, the thing for Abhay to do, the thing he had neglected to do for so many years, was to join the Chaitanya Math and act under his direction. Tirtha Maharaj mentioned several members of the Chaitanya Math who had recently accepted the sannyas order and said that Abhay could become one in time. He invited Abhay to come reside at the Chaitanya Math. The house that we have, there are rooms that are airy and well lit. We will treat you exclusively. There won't be any difficulty. We will take care that no inconveniences are caused. But as for printing books, he stopped. We are eagerly awaiting to print the books of Srila, books like Satsandarbha Vedanta based on devotional service and many other rare books by the Goswamis. First, we will print them. Books written by you will be checked by the editorial staff, and if the funds can be raised, then they can be printed according to priority. The books will be printed only if they are favorable for the service of Chaitanya Math. Therefore, if the fund is raised, then there is a plan to go abroad as well. Abhay was not encouraged. The main difficulty he felt was the Chaitanya Math's shortage of funds. Srila Prabhupada, I was working with my broken typewriter. I went to our Tirtha Maharaj. You give me a room and print my books. Give me some money. I will join you. I had thought, this is Guru Maharaj's institution. He did not say no, but the printing of the books was a difficult task for him. He had no money. He was hardly collecting for maintaining. Printing of books is a big job, and there is no guarantee of sale. Without printing books and going to the West, sannyas did not have any meaning for Abhay. And who knew when Tirtha Maharaj would sanction his taking sannyas? There was no point in going to Calcutta just to reside in an airy, well-lit room. That he had already in Vrindavan. Abhay wrote back to Tirtha Maharaj, mentioning his direct order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to preach in the English-speaking people. He wanted to go to the West right away, and he had thought that Chaitanya Math would welcome his offer. Both Abhay and Tirtha Maharaj had their responsibilities, but perhaps they could work together to carry out the desire of their spiritual master. Abhay asked Tirtha Maharaj to reconsider. On May 7, 1959, Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj wrote back, my suggestion is don't make any hasty decisions. For the time being, you stay with us and engage yourself in the service of the society and then accept Tridandi, sannyas. The purpose of accepting Tridandi is to serve the society. If that is your desire, then Chaitanya Math will decide about your going to America to preach and make all arrangements. It can never be the principle of the society to let one act according to his own individual attempt or desire. The society will decide after consulting with the heads what is to be done by whom. That is what I want to say. First of all, it is necessary to identify oneself with the society. In order to preach in America or in other foreign countries, it is important to have a dignified organization in the background. And secondly, it is necessary to establish oneself in India before going to preach in the foreign countries. Now it is that there are no conferences or meetings in the West as before. Communication is done through the media of television. Abai could understand the needs and priorities of the Chaitanya Mat, but he could not allow them to overrule what he considered the highest mandate, preaching as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had ordered. Abai had offered his services to the leaders of the Chaitanya Mat, thinking they might see things his way. He thought that with the world's crying need for Krishna consciousness staring them in the face, they might see that this Abai Babu was convinced and enthusiastic, and so should be sent right away with whatever he required. But they had other priorities. Abai next turned to Kesho Maharaj in Mathura, and Kesho Maharaj told Abai to take sannyas immediately. After corresponding with Tirtha Maharaj, Abai had felt some uncertainty about accepting sannyas, and now that he was being encouraged so strongly, he resisted. But Kesho Maharaj was insistent. Srila Prabhupada, I was sitting alone in Vrindavan writing. My godbrother insisted to me, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, you must do it. Without accepting the renounced order of life, nobody can become a preacher. So he insisted. Practically my spiritual master insisted. He wanted me to become a preacher, so he forced me through this godbrother. You accept. So unwillingly I accepted. Keshoji Gaudiya Math was located in the midst of one of Mathura's downtown bazaars. Its main entrance, an arch doorway, led into courtyard, opened the sky through metal grating above. The architecture was similar to that of the Vamsi Gopalji temple. The atmosphere was secluded, as in a monastery. Abai was a familiar, welcome figure here. He had lived here, written and studied in the library here, edited the Gaudiya Patrika, and donated the deity of Lord Chaitanya, who stood on the altar beside the deities of Radha and Krishna, Sri Sri Radha Vinod Bihariji. But his visit during September of 1959 was not an ordinary one. He entered the mat dressed in white, Abai Babu, but he would soon be leaving dressed in saffron, a Swami. Abai had been living as a renunciate for 9 years. There was no need for him to observe ceremony or to proclaim himself a sadhu by changing to saffron dress. But it was the parampara system that a man take Tridandi sannyas at the end of his life. He was aware of the cheating sannyasis. Even in Vrindavan, he had seen so-called sadhus who did not preach, but simply spent their days hunting for chapatis. Some swamis of Vrindavan even indulged illicitly in what they had supposedly come here to reject, sex life. Such persons were making a mockery of sannyas. And there was the caste of swamis also, who lived like ordinary householders, running temples as a business to support their families and accepting honor and donations from the public on the false basis of birth. Abai knew of these abuses of sannyas, but he also knew the real purpose of sannyas. Sannyas was for preaching. On the morning of September 17, 1959, in the 50-by-20-foot deity room on the second floor of the Keshoji Math, a group of devotees sat before the deities of Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. The deities were colorfully dressed in royal clothing and silver crowns. Radharani's right hand faced palm forward in benediction for the worshipper. At her side, her left hand held a flower for Krishna. Krishna stood like a dancer, placed his right leg in a casual tiptoe pose before his left, playing his long silver flute, which he held gracefully to his red lips. His long black hair reached down past his shoulders, and the garland of marigolds around his neck reached down to his knees. On his right stood the deity of Lord Chaitanya, his right arm raised, left arm at his side, his body straight, feet together. He was a soft golden color, and he had large eyes. a well-formed red mouth, straight black hair down to his shoulders. One level below the deities were pictures of the spiritual masters in disciplic succession: Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Bhakti Pragyan Kesho Maharaj. It's the last stage. Abai sat on a mat of kusha grass beside 90-year-old Sanatan, who also to receive sannyas that day. Sitting opposite the two candidates, Narayan Maharaj, Kesha Maharaj's disciple, prepared to conduct a ceremony of mantras, offerings of grains and ghee into the fire. Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, Abai's godbrother, known for sweet singing, played mirdanga and sang Vaishnav bhajans. Sitting on a raised asan, His Holiness B.P. Kesha Maharaj presided. Since there had been no notices or invitations, only the mat's few residents attended. Narayan Maharaj chanted the required mantras and then sat back silently while B.P. Kesha Maharaj lectured. Then, to everyone's surprise, Kesha Maharaj asked Abai to speak. Abai had not expected this. As he looked around at the gathering of devotees, he understood that the common language was Hindi. Only Kesha Maharaj and a few others spoke English, yet he knew he must speak in English. After Abai's speech, each initiate received his sannyas danda, the traditional head-high staff made of four bamboo rods bound together and completely enwrapped in saffron cloth. They were given their sannyas garments, one piece of saffron cloth for a dhoti and one for a top piece, uttara, two strips of cloth for underwear. They also received tulsi neck beads and the sannyas mantra. Kesha Maharaj said that Abai would now be known as Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj and that Sanatan would be Muni Maharaj. After the ceremony, the two new sannyasis posed for a photograph, standing on either side of their sannyas guru, who sat in a chair. B.P. Kesha Maharaj didn't impose any restrictions on Abai. He simply encouraged him to go on preaching. Yet Abai knew that to become A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami did not mean merely that he was giving up family, home comforts, and business that he had done 5 years ago, changing from white cloth to saffron cloth. From Abai Babu to Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj had a special significance. It was only a matter of time before Bhaktivedanta Swami would travel to the West, as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had ordained. This was Bhaktivedanta Swami's realization of his new sannyas status. The Gaudiya Patrika's account of the sannyas initiation included a biological sketch of Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, listing the major events of his life. The article concluded. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thanks for your patience. It's pretty long, but I think it was very intriguing and very encouraging to see it, knowing that all the sacrifices and austerities that he went through for our sake. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter. Are you ready? Look here. So Chapter 48, Text 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Verse 26.
Ka pandita. Ka pandita stvatva param sharanam samiya. Bhakta priya drita gira surida kritagna. Sarvan dadati surido bhajato bikama.
Sarvan dadati surido bhajato bikama.
Atmanamapyupachaya pachayo nayasya.
Please chant.
Kapandistatvara param sharanam samiya. Bhakta priya pira pira surida kritanya. Sarvan dadati surido bhajato bikama. Atma nama pyupachaya pachayo nayasya. Kapanditas twada param sharanam samiya. Bhakta priya drita gira shurida kritagya. Sarvam dadati surido bhajato bikama. Atma nama pyupachaya pachayo nayasya.
Mutters.
Kapanditas twada param sharanam samiya. Bhakta priya tikta vira surida kritagya. Sarvan dadati surido bhajato bikama. Atma nama pyupachaya pachayo nayasya.
The word for word.
Ka.
What.
Pandita.
Scholar.
Twat.
Other than you.
Aparam.
To another.
Sharanam.
For shelter.
Samiyat.
Would go.
Bhakta.
To your devotees.
Priyat,
affectionate.
Rita,
always.
True,
always true.
Gira,
whose words?
Surida,
the well-wisher.
Kritagyat,
grateful.
Sarvan,
all.
Dadati,
you give.
Surida,
to your well-wishing devotees.
Bhajata,
who are encouraged,
who are engaged in worshipping you.
Abhikaman,
desires.
Atmanam,
yourself.
Api,
even.
Upachaya,
increase.
Upachayo,
or diminution.
Na,
never.
Yasya,
whose.
Translation. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish.
Purport.
This verse describes both the Lord and his devotees as Surida, well-wishers. The Lord is a well-wisher of his devotee, and the devotee lovingly desires all happiness for the Lord. Even in this world, an excess of love may sometimes produce unnecessary solitude. For example, we often observe that a mother's loving concern for her adult child is not always justified by an actual danger to the child. A grown child may be wealthy, competent, and healthy, and yet the mother's loving concern continues. Similarly, a pure devotee always feels loving concern for Lord Krishna, as exemplified by Mother Yashoda, who could only think of Krishna as her beautiful son. Lord Krishna had promised Akrura that after killing Kamsa, he would visit his home, and now the Lord kept his promise. Akrura recognizes this and glorifies the Lord as Rita Gira, one who is true to his word. The Lord is Kritagya, grateful for whatever little worship a devotee offers, and even if the devotee forgets, the Lord does not. Om Gyana Timrindasya Gyana Jana Shalakya Chakshur Mritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Vinaya Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Dita Vishnu Mati Shri Guru Baruka Vujina Ayana Shri Shri Guru Nita Vibhara Parapata Kajana Nika Vahara Nika Ashwira. So, significantly in this verse here today, this word appeared twice. Surida appears. Surida and Surido, same thing, meaning a well-wisher. And well-wisher in not in an ordinary sense, but in the sense of total benefit for all living entities. So there are other places in the Bhagavatam where there are specific verses that describes these qualities of the Lord and his devotees as the benefactor. So in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, text 29, is a very, very popular verse, describes Lord Krishna. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarva loke maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam nyatva mam shantim richate. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and a benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. And then in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, status quo, in the teachings of Lord Kapila to his mother, Devahuti, verse chapter 25, the glories of devotional service, text 21, Lord Kapiladev describes the same qualities of a devotee. It's also a very popular verse within our society. Titikshava karunika surida sarva dehinam. So here it says surida sarva bhutanam. The Lord is described as the benefactor. And the devotee here is described surida sarva dehinam. Same thing, there's no difference. So, Ajata Satravaha Shanta Sadava Sadhu Bhushanam. Translation. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime. So, these are the qualities that are described here and are associated with the word Surit, or as stated here, Surida, the same thing. Surit is a friend that all they're concerned with is the benefit for others. So it's a special kind of friendship. It's more of a, sometimes it says that English words kind of describe these expressions. So we're finding here that Akrura is glorifying the Lord for this quality, but indirectly he's also glorifying himself and all the devotees of the Lord as having this ever well-wishing nature, a nature which you can only find in devotional service, not even the yogic practices or the different other asanas as described elsewhere. You don't find these qualities actually manifest. And one thing that is very significant also is that the devotee here is described as the well-wisher, the Lord is described as the well-wisher, but if you read the purports of these verses, we would understand that the devotee excels the Lord in this quality. He is more of a well-wisher than the Lord himself. Because the Lord promises that he would give every living entity their independence. He will not interfere. So if one wants to become a devotee, the Lord gives the necessary intelligence and qualifications and facilities for one to become a devotee. If one wants to be a materialist, the Lord does the same. He gives all facilities. One wants to be a demon, he also gives all facilities. And he gives them the reasoning and logic and all the intelligence that can steer one in that direction for becoming a materialist or a demon. He does not interfere. Whatever desire one has, he fulfills it. So, we have seen here, like in this past times, in the past few chapters, where Kamsa was sending so many demons to harass the devotees. And Krishna knew that all these demons were coming due to Kamsa's instructions and doing. So he could have, as what he mentioned in the earlier chapters of Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bharati bharata. He actually come whenever there is a rising of irreligion. And what he comes to do? He comes to destroy the demons and protect the devotees. So Krishna could have done that. Okay, this demon, this Kamsa, is harassing the devotees. So let me get rid of him and all the problems would subside. All would stop immediately. But Krishna didn't do that. Kamsa wants to be a demon. He wants to see him as death personified. So Kamsa was always seeing Krishna in that way. From before Krishna's birth, Kamsa was always meditating on Krishna as death personified. So he was always seeing that feature of Krishna. So Krishna gives him the facility to continue seeing that feature. If that's what he wants, that's his desire, then Krishna doesn't interfere. He allows him to see that. So he allows him. Similarly, with the cowherd boys, Srila Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book. He said all the sages, and previously they asked Krishna to play with him. So Krishna said, okay, you want to play, then let's play. Come along, you know, join us as cowherd boys, and let's play. So that was their desire, so Krishna fulfilled that. Similarly, the gopis, they wanted to have Krishna as his lover. Krishna said, okay, you want to have me as his lover, so be it. You know, come and enjoy conjugal pastimes with me. Similarly here, earlier in this chapter, with Kubja, Trivakra, she wanted to enjoy with Krishna in that way. That was her desire. So Krishna fulfilled that. With all, it's described that she was unfortunate. And she was unfortunate in one sense because she had a desire that is not conducive to a devotee's life. It's not conducive to Krishna consciousness. But yet, Krishna fulfilled. Krishna doesn't interfere. He gives that independence. So he's wishing all of them well in their pursuit of whatever they think would be their happiness. So in that sense, Krishna is the benefactor in one sense. That's it. He's the benefactor for all of them. But the devotee excels that character of Krishna in his benevolence, in his benefacting nature, that he does not allow within his ability as much as possible, he does not allow anyone to get in any atmosphere in the world other than being a servant of Krishna. He intervenes in their demoniac nature with all they may have desires that are not conducive to spiritual life. The devotee intervenes and he goes through all these sacrifices, as what we heard here from this reading of Srila Prabhupada's taking sannyas. That it was so much sacrifices. His godbrother wanted him to do one thing and he decided against it. He went through so much sacrifices just so that he can give all this the real benediction to humanity at large. Because that's the nature of the devotee. This principle, this nature of the devotee is described in other places as the intervening principle of a devotee. That the Lord allows them to carry on, if they want to be materialists or whatever, he allows them to carry on peacefully. You don't disturb them. But the devotee intervenes. The devotee tries to disturb that peaceful material circumstances, per se. Of course, there is no peaceful material circumstances. Horrible, but we may think it's peaceful. So the devotee intervenes with that, in that principle. He intervenes, he gets between the person and their material status and tries to bring them around to Krishna consciousness, which is for their own ultimate benefit. So that's how it's described as the actual Surhida Sarvadehinam, that nature of the devotee. The actual well-wisher, the actual well-being of everyone. He wishes everyone well. Like Srila Prabhupada always writes, addresses your ever well-wisher. When I first joined the movement and I saw that, I saw, it's another one of the Hare Krishna phrases that here's a way, here's a nice way. We always, like whenever we used to write letters, we would say, you're truly, or your friend, or whatever. So when I saw the ever well-wisher, thought, this is another way of ending a letter, you know, but I never understood the great meaning of it, and even until now I still don't, but I'm gradually understanding a little better. So, in this way, a devotee is greater than the Lord himself, because he intervenes, even like we saw in the case with Krishna and Kamsa. Back to this, it's only when Kamsa came to Mathura with all Krishna was trying to kill him in so many ways. Krishna still didn't bother with Kamsa. He could have walked right into the arena, went right up to Kamsa and deal with him. But no, he was dealing with the elephant, he was dealing with the wrestlers. It's only when Kamsa came to the point, well, okay, now, you know, harass all these citizens and come to kill him directly, come to the climax of the whole situation, then Krishna turned on him. So, ordinarily, I used to argue with myself that, you know, why did Krishna allow all his devotees to be so harassed for such a long time by this demon Kamsa? Why not get rid of him from day one? But Krishna doesn't interfere with that. He enjoys with his devotees. He gives the devotees pleasure. But the devotee himself, he immediately works upon it. Like with the pastime of Jagai and Madai. Lord Chaitanya told Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, he said, don't bother with these two drunkards. You know, don't risk your lives. That's stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yet the very next day, Lord Nityananda said no, that everyone has the right to be delivered by the Lord. That's his mission. So he actually went and approached these two worst of characters. And he had them delivered at the risk of his life. Actually, that pastime is very funny. But the day before, at the end of the day, at the end of Sankirtan day, we all go and give our reports on Sankirtan. It's a usual thing. All Sankirtan devotees, at the end of the day, they would report to the temple. Talking of which, I have a Sankirtan report. Last Friday, we had a Ratiyatra on the UCF campus in Orlando, which is about the largest university in Florida. It was very, very restricted. There's so many regulations, there's so many restrictions, so the organizers try to contain it so that we follow and we are favored by these authorities and we can continue doing our festivities and preaching programs there. So by Friday evening, Bhadra Prabhu got a call or email, something to that effect, from the authorities, and they said that they were extremely satisfied with our preaching work, they were extremely satisfied with our conduct, And here you go. Oh, actually, it's an email. Here you go. We gave you permit for next year, September 15, 2015. You can have Ratayatra on campus and bring all your entourage. So that was a nice gesture. So anyway, at the end of the day, the devotees give their Sankirtan report. So Haridas Thakur, when he went to Lord Chaitanya asked him, well, what was the report for today? He said, oh my Lord, today we are about just lost our lives with these two drunkards, Jagai and Madai. So like that he expressed, because they were so vicious. And Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, don't disturb them, leave them alone, continue preaching. But Nityananda, representing the devotee, he intervened into the lives of these two worst of personalities. So this is the nature of the devotee. We saw Srila Prabhupada risk his life. One time Srila Prabhupada said, I could have stayed in Vrindavan, you know. But no, he risked his life for the benefit of everyone. Lord Jesus did the same thing. Actually, that's stated in the purport of this Bhaktaram Yagyatapasam verse. So the devotee risks their lives and do what it takes to intervene into others' comfortable setting to give them the higher benefit of Krishna consciousness. So in this way, the devotee excels the character of the Lord himself by being showing that he is more merciful. Titikshava Karunika, you know, Karunika is mercy. He's more merciful than the Lord in that sense. So I'll just stop here. These are a few points I had. I know it was kind of pretty lengthy with the reading earlier, and I don't want to stretch it anymore. So if anyone has any questions or comments, we can take them. Oh, Madan Mohan Prabhu.
In the verse there, it seemed like there was a progression where Krishna says he'll give whatever the devotee wants. And he said that he'd also give himself. So that means the devotees can want Krishna, and that if they don't want anything else but Krishna, then Krishna will give himself. Is that the way that it... Because it seemed like there's two different...
And there are different ways you can take different angles. So
yeah,
I think what seems to be indicated here is that Krishna gives so much because he loves his devotees that he's even willing to give himself. He gave himself to his devotees, so he put himself totally under his devotees' control. And I think it's the previous verse or previous. I believe it's in verse 22, where he talks about two different reasons why Krishna placed himself like that. One, both for his devotees' benefits, so that his devotees can be in control of him. That's like Mother Yashoda. You know, Mother Yashoda was totally in control of Krishna. Krishna was destroying so much demons, all with their powerful weapons. But when Mother Yashoda came with a stick, he was running and crying. He was so scared. Actually, I think one time I told the story of Krishna when he had the Damodar pastime. He was at one point, the whole assembly of about 3 million sages. And they were arguing and trying to conclude who is the greatest personality. So then Lord Brahma, who was the head of the association, he said, let us ask the greatest devotee among ourselves here, Narad Muni, and he has whatever he says is the right conclusion. So then at that point, by Narad Muni's vision, he brought up Krishna appeared in the sky, and I saw this little pastime with Krishna there. And he said, Krishna is the greatest personality, that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. And He said, but there is only one problem. He said, this Krishna, he has only one problem, and that is, he is afraid of women. So then they showed his pastime, where Krishna was, after he was tied up to the grinding mortar, Nanda Baba came, he took him away, and he said, now come, I'll show you how to worship the Shalagram Shila. So Krishna saw this nice black stone, and he was thinking, oh, this is such a nice apple, and I want to eat it. So he was going to grab it, and then Nanda Baba says, no, you can't, this is a deity, you have to, I'll have to teach you how to worship this deity nicely. So he was pouring butter and ghee, doing abhishek to the deity. Then he forgot something in the other room, so he left. So he left and he went into the other room. So when he went there, Krishna said, oh, now I get my chance to eat this apple. So he grabbed the apple and he stuck it in his mouth. But when he stuck it in his mouth, he said, uh-oh, this is a stone. And it was all filled in his little mouth, and he couldn't chew, he couldn't move. So then he was trying to get it out from his mouth, so he was screaming a little bit. So then Mother Yashoda heard him, so Mother Yashoda came in. So when she came in and she saw Krishna with all the, from the abhishek, the butter and ghee leaking down his mouth. And she said, uh-oh, this rascal again. So she picked up the stick on him. So when she picked up the stick, he was trying to fight to get it out of his mouth and try to run away. So she grabbed him, she squeezed his mouth, and the Shalagram Shila came out. So he was crying. He was crying in fear of Mother Yashoda. So then Narada Muni said, just see that our Krishna, he's the greatest personality, but he has one problem, he's afraid. But that's a pleasure that Krishna gets, that allows himself to be under the control of his devotee. So he gives himself that so much, so merciful he is, but he doesn't give himself like that to the demons. To Kamsa, he was death personified. To the devotee, the cowherd boys were riding on his back, the girls were chastising him, the cowherd girls, and the gopis, and they were telling on him. Balaram would tell on him, and whenever he does something wrong, he would be scared. The boys would be riding on his back. There's so many different things. So he gives himself to the devotees, but when the demons come, it's a different story. So I hope that answers your question. Okay. Anything else? So I guess we can stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.